You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Quasi-cerebral talk and tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We are the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded stolen lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on these exact same lands as well, as I'm doing a live show today. And here at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship. My name is Leslie, and I was like trying to think about what I should talk about today on the program, because I'm going to be kind of real, kind of honest, you know. A lot of stuff that's happening in the world right now and in my personal life has got me incredibly depressed. And it's not even as though I don't have, like, the thoughts to make critiques or to discuss these things. I simply do not have the motivation to do that today. despite a lot of current events happening that could use, some kind of like intersectional feminist, anti-imperialist viewpoints, I've decided to not do that today. Instead, I'm going to talk about maybe other slightly more current event things, just for the sake of my own sanity, because if not, I will indeed go insane in the live booth. I'm going to be talking about a few movies that I've seen recently. I guess like in light of the Academy Awards, though very few of these movies were even touched by the Academy Awards. I think maybe only one or two. We'll see how many I can cover today. But for sure, I want to talk about the Netflix Japan original biopic? It's a story about a real person called This Is I, and I will also be discussing just a little tiny bit about Sinners, because, oh boy, even though Sinners won quite a few awards last night at the Academy Awards, I haven't had a chance to talk about this movie that I really, really enjoy quite yet on the program. So we're going to be doing that, and let's see if we can tie all this reviews and stuff together with political things that actually matter. Let's see if I have the brain power to do that, to keep it somewhat relevant to Typically Tuesdays. But we'll start off first today with some music. This is Buddy Guy, who actually made a cameo during the end of the Sinners movie. He's kind of like a blues legend. This is him, Jeff Beck, and Eric Clapton with Early in the Morning.
She don't live there no more. I said, early in the morning. since she was out. I knocked on the father door and he began to shout. I said, "Girl, in the morning, I knew it's early in the morning, early in the morning. I ain't got nothing but the blues." We'll be right back.
Doesn't love music? Join the weekly discussion at the CJSF Record Club with other music aficionados, checking out new releases and forgotten classics, exploring and learning about genres and loving music. Every Thursday at CJSF Burnaby from 4 p.m. till 5 p.m. Listen, learn, and share.
Join us for Record Club every Thursday, as you heard on that PSA. It's typically Tuesdays here on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm Leslie. You just heard Jerry Cantrell and Ludwig Göransson with In Moonlight. That was a track off of the original motion picture soundtrack for Sinners, which is a movie that honestly I did not expect to enjoy as much as I had. And I guess to some extent, that was kind of a silly thought. I was kind of interested in watching it when it had come out, but I'm a little bit of a weenie pants, so I wasn't gonna watch it in theaters, like, oh my god. What if it's scary? It's got vampires. What if it's scary? And so I decided to wait for it to be available in some other format for me to watch at home. But I had a feeling that I would enjoy it anyways, just because I've enjoyed Ryan Coogler's films in the past. The production looked really interesting. The music seemed really cool. And all in all, there's just, like, there were so many things that made it seem very intriguing. And I did have a good feeling about it before I went in to watch it, finally, about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I enjoyed it while I was watching it. I thoroughly enjoyed it after it was over. I remember sitting on my sofa being like, big smile, like, yeah. Great, that was good. Somehow, in the weeks after, since I first watched it, I have just enjoyed it even more. Like, I think I watched it at just the best time, because, you know, right after I had finished my viewing of it, the movie would go into, like, campaigning for the Academy Awards, right? And there was all this really cool behind-the-scenes stuff that was being released that, you know, like, we would usually get if you, like, owned, like, a VHS copy. Or VHS? Is it called VHS? The VCR. VCR? Is that what it's called? The tape. If you, like, owned a tape of the movie back in the day, or, like, if you owned, like, a DVD, right? You don't really get that a lot of the times with movies these days, I find. Even, like, stuff that's just, like, being released, like, as behind-the-scenes stuff. Like, where is that? But, like, more of the behind-the-scenes stuff was getting released, and it was just so cool. There were so many things about the production of it that just, like, made me light up. And it, I think retroactively, it has somehow become one of my favorite movies, and I think very fondly of it whenever it does, like, something about it appears in the news or on social media or in, like, real life discussion. So, of course, you can imagine my excitement when I found out that it won various awards last night at the Academy Awards. A shout out to Michael B. Jordan. Incredible performance. One of my favorite scenes in the movie. Oh, by the way, I'm going to be talking about movies this episode of Typically Tuesdays, and there will be spoilers. So get into it or don't. One of my favorite scenes in Sinners, though, is that part where Stack, he's like, you know, he gets chomped, right? He kind of like starts to die because he's bitten by a vampire, and Smoke is like holding him, and he's like telling him, like, bro, don't die. And Stack is bleeding out on the floor, and you know, the intensity of emotions that are flashing across Smoke's face, it was so good. It was so good. That part got to me. That was the part where I was like, okay, Michael B. Jordan, like, I knew you were a pretty good actor, but like, who you really decided to pull out everything, all the stops here. So that was amazing. And one of the, I mean, I think I'm the type of person to like movies about horrible people having horrible things happen to them. And so, as you can imagine, I obviously enjoyed the ending of the movie. But then after the ending, we also meet Stack and Mary in the 90s. And that part probably was my other favorite scene of the movie. I guess I just really like Stack. You know, Stack kind of had to die in order for him to come back as a vampire, you know? So, anyways, if I had to pick between one of the twins to be buds with, I would pick Stack, personally. But that's besides the point. What am I going... Okay, this is a stream of consciousness episode, so let me reel it back. When Stack and Mary make their appearance again in the 1990s, I was blown away. I love the costuming in this film, and to think about how Stack and Mary, who are these, you know, at this point, like, decades-old vampires who appear as though they're in their, like, I don't know, like, early 30s, I guess, rolling into the local blues club, decked out in, like, total 90s gear was amazing to me. And it made me think, like, what would they wear in our year of 2026? You know, I think, like, sometimes, like, I find myself, like, trying to grapple with that. Grapple? Is that the right term to use? Sometimes I think to myself, like, about that specifically, because, you know, for example, with, like, Interview with the Vampire, like, the AMC adaptations of the Anne Rice novels, what we kind of see with, like, Louis, mostly at this point, like, is that he has a very plain, sort of boring kind of style. He's just wearing, like, really, like, normcore classics, and it's kind of boring, to be honest. So even though he was, like, you know, alive in, like, the 1920s and stuff, and he's, like, dressed well. In the 2020s, he's dressed well, but he's, like, kind of boring. Whereas Stack and Mary, I feel like, because they were so colorful in the 1990s, there is a good chance that they are probably also very colorful in the 2020s. And I found myself thinking, like, what would they possibly be wearing during this time of the world right now. And I was thinking and thinking and thinking. I feel like Mary's probably, like, pretty cool with a bodycon. Like, bodycon dresses. But I was thinking about Stack. And then I realized I don't really know how, like, cool, flamboyant, stylish, straight men dress. And that made me quite sad. I just couldn't really imagine what he was wearing. So, you know, if anybody's got cool fan art of what Stack and Mary would be dressing in 2026, please let me know. Send me an email, typicallytuesdays@gmail.com. I'd love to see your fan art. Yeah. Speaking of movies about bad people experiencing bad things, another movie that I enjoyed recently was Frankenstein by Guillermo del Toro. I am quite the fan of del Toro's work, I guess. I think maybe he's the first filmmaker whose work made me appreciate horror more, because, or appreciate horror just as a genre, because I liked kind of his stories about monsters being, and the kind of like social marginalization that they experience, being an allegory for, you know, the social and political marginalization of oppressed peoples. And he has a very, you know, empathetic and compassionate way of exploring topics around who is the monster and who is the man, you know, that type of thing. And so Frankenstein was a film that I definitely wanted to watch. I knew that I would be sitting down and, like, taking my time with it when it had come out on streaming. And I really loved Jacob Elordi's performance in it as the creature. I don't know that I've seen very much with him in it, but the impression that I get based on what people tell me about Jacob Elordi is, like, he's like a gigantic, good-looking man. And it seems that in a lot of his roles in his career, he's sort of been typecasted as the gigantic, good-looking, slightly toxic, slightly abusive, evil man. As seen in Euphoria, as seen in his miscasting in Wuthering Heights by Emerald Fennell. And I was really touched by the gentleness that he brought to the creature. He gave the creature a lot of depth and dimension, because obviously, you know, he's like this gigantic hulking dude, and he is supposed to be, you know, kind of scary looking, right? He is Frankenstein's creature. But watching this film and seeing the way that he was, like, being rejected despite not knowing much of anything in the world, it was really heart-wrenching. I think I was, like, weeping throughout, like, throughout, like, the entire second half of the movie. You know, that, for whatever reason, I guess, like, that kind of, that made me want to, like, talk to a lot of my friends about it and, like, tell them to watch it. I really liked the way that del Toro explores the themes of the cycles of violence and parental neglect and abuse in the movie. And based on the little that I understand about the original Frankenstein novel, that those themes are quite central to the story. And so I liked the way that Del Toro tried to depict the violence of that cycle. There are very good video essays out there that discuss this more in depth. Princess Weeks has one, I think, that she released a few months ago that speak exactly to that, about how and why Del Toro's adaptation is probably can probably be considered the most accurate to the novel. But then the other thing about about Frankenstein that I enjoyed was Victor Frankenstein, and sort of like the comeuppance that he experiences, which is kind of sad, right? Because again, this is a movie that is, you know, this is a story that is about the cycles of parental abuse and how violence begets more violence. And so, in many ways, Victor Frankenstein is actually a very sympathetic character. And I think Del Toro does a really good job of depicting that and showing us how the childhood traumas of that Victor experiences shape him into the man that he becomes. At the same time, I think Oscar Isaac's performance is so eccentric and in some ways cold that he just does a really good job of he does a really good job of making the Like, he does a really good job of taking the violence that Victor has experienced and turning it into something, turning it into like tangible damage that we see through like throughout his adult life. Victor Frankenstein is, like, in my opinion, one of the most annoying, worst types of men. He is petty, he is entitled, he thinks that he's better than everybody else, but he is also deeply insecure, he is a manipulator, he abandons his own child, and he is violent, he's terrible. And throughout this film, there were several times where he was just so annoying and so frustrating. I knew what he had gone through, and I knew sort of like the social isolation that he was experiencing. But this, you know, annoying incel edgelord made me want to crawl into the screen and just like slap him a few times. And the cathartic release of the confrontation at the end between the creature and Victor, I felt was very satisfying. Even though both of these two people have gone through hell, what